Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast here on the Nerd Party Network. I'm Darren Moser, joined as always by my fellow Strandees, City Alpha 3, the movie.
Dun, 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 dun.
Philip and Daniel, how's it been? Another week, just us this week, but that's all we really need.
I mean,
we'll find our counterparts in the program. I don't know.
I was listening to our intro music, and I was just crying. I mean, it's just beautiful, the intro, and oh god.
Sometimes I'll just take the logo and I'll spin it around and around and around, and it's too much. But yes, well, again, still, hey guys, new Star Trek week again.
Yay!
Are we still celebrating that? Is it still a thing? Sure.
Celebrate it. I was gonna say it's lost its novelty at this point.
Yeah,
there was a time.
We're now jaded.
Many moons ago, when it was very exciting, and now it's just kind of like, okay, it's Thursday.
Hey, but you know what? You get to watch Star Trek whenever you want to. I mean, new Star Trek whenever you want to. There's no commercials. The old days it was like, I think Voyager's on at midnight. I don't know. They keep moving it around.
Or heck, the old days of you missed it on your automatic record for your VCR, and then you're done. You missed that episode. You'll never get to watch Threshold again. You missed
no!
it. It's gone. But today we are going to be talking about episode 9, the penultimate episode of season 1 of Lower Decks, Crisis Point, otherwise known as Crisis Point, The Rise of Vindicta. And I feel like I might have hyped this a little bit during the week as I was posting on social media, because when I first watched this, it was like 11 p.m. on Wednesday night, and I was tired, and I'm like, oh, hey, Lower Decks is out. And I watched it, and I don't know why, but it hit like real hard for me. I was cracking up. I was laughing a lot. And I apologize if that set an unrealistic expectation for this episode for you guys. But for our overall points, I really enjoyed this episode. I think it's my favorite episode of Lower Decks. And it just was really, really funny. I mean, nowadays we say like, oh, yay, laugh out loud, like type LOL, and we don't actually laugh. I was actually laughing. I have the footage. But
were you on Twitch doing your reaction shots?
But yeah, no, I really liked it. Daniel, what was your overall impression of Crisis, The Rise of Vindicta?
Was it an even number movie or an odd number movie?
Oh,
for
that's
you?
That's a good question.
Well, that is a good question. I thought it was okay. I thought it was honestly like the
odd number.
The trappings and the style, and of course, you know, we'll get into it about like it was basically Star Trek movie lampoon the episode, so, and all that stuff was fairly well done, but the actual meat, the center of the episode, felt very disappointing and hollow. Like we actually finally get to deal with some of these issues with Mariner, and turns out we don't. We're never gonna get there. It's just fluff. But anyways, I was more annoyed at the end than anything. I was like, what the, like, okay, like, so she does need therapy. I want to get that straight. She needs therapy.
We all agree.
Yeah,
we all agree.
Absolutely needs
as
therapy.
She's phasering all of her crewmates and friends like with no remorse. Yeah,
but we'll get into that. I'm sure. But
she's kind of racist, speciesist.
She is, yeah.
Yeah. What was your overall feelings on this episode, Philip?
Well, I enjoyed it, and I, because not only you, Darren, I think Aaron last week had kind of teased, because he'd seen the episode already, kind of teased that it was really good, and other people, and so you did build me up, and I watched. I'm like, okay, I mean, you know, it's not the best episode ever, but no, it was good. I enjoyed it. I'm a sensitive soul, so the killing threw me off a little bit. You know, I know it's all holodeck, but I'm like, man, he's like, she's really killing everyone.
She enjoyed it a little too much.
Yeah, I was with Tendi. I'm like, I'm going to leave, you know. So, you know, whatever. That's just me being whatever. But, no, but I did enjoy all the jokes and all the funny things. But I think, like y'all have said, this episode let things out. And so you even had, you know, because I've been asking, like, Tendi's, you know, or, and Orion, we never talk about
it. We never talk about it.
And we talked about it a little bit. I thought that was interesting. And, of course, yeah. Yeah, and I'll agree with you not to skip to the end. But I agree with Mariner because, you know, at the end, when she's fighting herself and her holographic self is, like, giving all the self-explanation in, like, you know, 30 seconds, like, I want to help. And then, like, Mariner's cured at the end magically. And I'm like, so is she just going to be a good officer now? Because that's what she says. I'm going to be a good officer now. I'm like, is that it? Are we done with crazy Mariner? Is she cured? That was easy.
But, and I think in some ways, a lot of this was set up for next week. I think maybe next week is going to have more of the payoff. Like, they're saving that for the finale of the season that you're expecting, Daniel. But we'll get to that towards the end of the episode.
Stakes have never been higher.
Have they? Are they really?
No. It does seem like a weird, like, you know, we talked a lot about this season and how, like, it's been a polar opposite of Discovery and Picard, where those are singularly focused on their plots, and it's tunnel vision to the last episode of the season. And here it's been more freeform, more episodic.
Yeah. Like, what's going to happen? I don't know.
It feels weird that, like, the hinge that they're placing all this drama on is now we know that she's her daughter. And, like, that's, yeah. And it's like, that's, if, why even have, like, a hint? Like, why even have, like, a cliffhanger? Why do that? It's so weird. Cause, like, who cares? Why is this a thing? But anyways, well, I guess we'll find out next week. Maybe it might matter in some way, but.
Well, maybe. It's saying, like, for Lower Decks, when it's, like, working with your friends, finding out that one of them is the boss's kid, that's an upset.
Well, I think for just Boimler. Like, I mean, well, not, yeah. not to speak for their characters, but I don't think Rutherford...
I'd laugh if Tendi and Rutherford were like, oh, yeah, we totally knew that. You didn't know that about the first...
Yeah, I would love that. Isn't it funny. Obvious? I mean, they look almost... I don't know. They sound exactly. They have the same mannerisms. They order the same food. I mean, you know.
we start off on a nondescript two alien race planet where Mariner thinks she's helping them not eat each other. Yeah, it's
not
kind
eat
of...
each other. There's one eating and one beating.
Okay, that's true. But she's doing it all wrong because apparently she wasn't supposed to
Prime
do
directive.
That.
Come on.
Well, but they didn't say anything about, like, are they non-warp capable? Or just in general, she shouldn't interfere with the fact that one is eating the other?
So
I was a little
confused. Did you guys get... At first, I thought this was a direct reference, but I think it's more of an homage.
Oh, of, like, the Antikins?
Yeah, at first, I thought it was the Antikins. I'm like, what the hell? Yeah. Like, but then I'm like, no, it's not. But it definitely seems
But it's
like
basically it. One that looks like one and one looks like the other. Like, yeah. A snake people and a whatever
dog.
Those other ones are. Yeah, yeah. Dog people. I did like Mariner's, like, chill out, it's the 80s, which is
that
funny
was a funny
it's
one.
2380. and I'm like,
we don't need
not,
therapy. Yeah.
You're not wrong, but.
I was thrown off. Sorry.
No, go for it.
I was thrown off by, like, that the therapist office, like, looking at, there's no way you can tell that's on the ship. Like, I know psychologically it is.
Right.
You know, not to make a pun there. But, like, I mean, but, like, there's no, like, curve to the wind. You know, it's just, like, office. They just went to an 80s psychiatrist, or, you know, well, I mean, it's really modern day anyway. But it's all just plush and plants. I mean, there's no, like, could you put a curve somewhere or a window out in space? It's just literally therapist office.
Right.
Carpet?
Yeah, we get,
I think that's carpet? You know.
We get the therapist, Dr. Miglimo.
And he really makes a meal out of that scene.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that boy. I mean, it was funny, the whole food metaphor thing. And it's funny because it's terrible, and we all hate it just as much as the characters, I would assume. But Yeah, just you're in a pickle, you know, stop being a pineapple, you know, to make a meal of this. It just keeps going. But he doesn't even really get through. And this is where, like you guys are saying, like her anger really starts to come out. Like she smashes his table and like she's really upset. And I'm like, this is not productive. Like she is not reacting like a Starfleet officer would.
I had to look it up because I'd forgotten to do this before, but I'm like, that voice sounds familiar. Couldn't place it. Watched it twice, still couldn't place it. So the actor that plays the therapist's voice is Paul F. Tompkins. And if you're familiar with BoJack Horseman, he's Mr. Peanut Butter in BoJack Horseman. So
Okay,
that totally makes sense. Yeah. And he was pretty silly. Pretty good as the counselor that loves food puns, I guess.
Yeah, because I would just think, and again, my usual disclaimer, it's a cartoon, I get it. But like in the universe, like she probably has a chemical imbalance. Like in other words, this is a trip to sick bay. Like she needs some drugs, is what I'm saying. There's something wrong with that or with Mariner.
Yeah, well, I mean, and we see a bit of mirroring at the end too, when the captain also kicks over his therapist table and breaks it, and I'm like,
his bonsai tree.
I mean, they're definitely related for sure, right. And maybe they both need the therapy. I don't know. Like, this is a pretty big problem here, and this also might be why there should be and probably is a regulation where you don't get to serve in the same ship where your parent is a captain.
Yeah,
I won't even get into that because I'm annoyed with it. But
I mean, what it really comes down to is a lack of communication between Mariner and Freeman. Like.
Freeman,
you know, Freeman is assuming that Mariner is up to something when she walks down the hallway laughing. Like that shouldn't be the normal response for the captain or a mother, but it's because they don't talk.
On the other hand, I have seen Mariner, and I don't think she's out of line thinking that.
No, but I think they're never going to get past it if they both don't come together and.
But we
make
had
a fresh
the
start.
Whole scene when they were. I think it was the holodeck, or they were rappelling down whatever. And there was that whole breakthrough scene where they talked about, and they had like a breakthrough and that's what I'm saying. Like there was,
and
no,
then it went back to nothing.
Reset
there was no,
button.
Yeah. There was no traction there. You know, it's just like, that's why it's frustrating because we're doing this over and over and over again. I don't think this is going to go anywhere either. It feels like.
Well, I guess it's all we're going to talk about with her character is this relationship with her mother, and we'll talk about it for 10 episodes.
And then at the end of next episode, Boimler's memory will be erased and he'll forget that he knows that they're mother and daughter. Season 2, it'll be the same. No, I'm kidding.
It could happen. You never know. But then we get to the holodeck and it starts. First it starts with them like shot putting with Da Vinci, which is hilarious because apparently Da Vinci's like, you know, just there.
He's just
which,
one of the stock characters.
Yeah, well, stock characters.
In the holodeck, yeah.
We thought he was special with Captain Janeway, but I guess not.
Which I think is such a funny thing because I think if for non-Trekkies or even non-diehard Trekkies, because maybe they haven't seen Voyager, or haven't seen every episode of Voyager, they may just think that's just a random historical character. Like, oh, I might as well have Einstein in there or something. You know, but it's like, no, that's an actual Star Trek holographic character. So I think that's funny. The voice actors died, right?
Oh, I didn't know that. Was he? Has he?
Did am I right? Or is he still alive?
It was John Rhys Davies on Voyager, and Gary Cole did it for Lower Decks.
But I mean, is John, he's still alive?
I don't know.
Yes, John Rhys Davies is still alive.
Okay, I just
thought
he's also.
But maybe those two lines of dialogue he was too pricey, maybe for.
Yeah. So we get that, and then so there's like hopscotch holodecks because they're doing that program, but then Boimler walks in, is like, wait, I need to practice my groveling. So I've created the Barclays School of 101. He took Barclays School on holographic replicating your crewmates, I guess. Like already he's going into dicey water with the crew logs, and
I thought these were personal.
Yeah,
there's definitely, you know, we talked about this with Next Gen, and probably every time the holodeck comes up. But there, if not just social boundaries, there definitely have to be like regulations against this sort of thing.
Like you don't make holograms of your friends.
No.
You just, or your commanding officer. You don't.
Or I guess like maybe in the case of like simulation, it's okay. But fantasy role playing feels
right
icky.
Well, like if you're taking the test to be chief engineer or something,
right.
And you got to choose to kill Geordi, like you want to be that realistic.
Right.
You want to have to order him into that hatchway and you just walk away.
But if you're trying to push, you know, Dr. Crusher on a flower swing, or was that Captain Crusher? You know, or
someone,
you're trying to murderize the captain, like you think that there would be protocols in place that you can't do that.
Although I did like how Submariner obviously takes over the program, and I like how they lean into the I just type three lines of code and the computer's gonna fill in the rest, because it's true, because she didn't spend any time actually writing this. Then we kick into the movie mode.
She had her fanfic ready.
And we get the letterbox drops in, and we get the floating titles that for some reason bean you in the head if you don't duck.
Now I'm trying to think if that was just any kind of random, because I think when I think of Star Trek movie credits that not bother me, but that are memorable, not necessarily in a good way, is First Contact with the eye test credits, if you're familiar with
that. Get all blurry as they come towards you.
So.
Yeah, it was like combo of that and then like next gen, like flying through effect, you know, kind of. But yeah, and then the music got all like amped up and they got shading on their like one side, like the look was a little different.
The thing that threw me off, because, you know, I'm a nerd and pay attention, I think one of the first credits, I don't know if it was the first, but the second was like Walden something. And I'm like, who is that? And then we get that character who I think we've seen before on the crew. I just don't think we've ever given him a name.
Was he the guy that died, the Zahn?
I was supposed to be Boimler.
Yeah.
Shemp.
What was it? Yeah, it's a movie. We got Zahn. Yeah, so now it's, you know, first we start off where they're like water skiing, and he's just, again,
it's hydro
Boimler.
Scooting.
Oh, hydro. Oh,
it's not water skiing.
That's sorry. Not water skiing.
Just because we have to drill down to
ski
everything. My thought, and I could be completely off base, with starting with this kind of random activity of the crew. It made me think, and maybe I'm completely off base, of the cut, deleted intro for Generations. If you remember that, I think they filmed some of it.
Oh,
never
I
used
to,
obviously. Was having Kirk hydro parachute, I don't know what the word is, you know, down to Earth, and Scotty and Chekhov greet him on land. And I think that's when they're like, oh, we have to go to the Enterprise B or something. But like that was the original plan
in
the beginning.
Right. Then they're like, we already tried this in Star Trek V and it didn't really
I was thinking of Star Trek
stick.
V.
Yeah. It did have a Star Trek V feel to it. And I liked how she's like, this isn't a vacation. This is a business.
Vacation over.
And then she's like, it's a vacation over. Yeah.
My wife should laugh at that.
And but they get we get the name drop where like there is no San Clemente. And it's just like all dramatic.
And then I wanted to Google, is there a San Clemente?
I was just going to ask Darren, what is the significance of San Clemente?
San Clemente, it's just another city. They're all just cities
whoa.
At this point.
Sorry, listeners.
See, if they were clever, that would have been, you would have been able to tell from the name. Like, it would have been too far away, or it would have been from Arizona or something.
Right.
Like, does there anything?
The USS Phoenix, it's like, wait a minute, that's not a California
that doesn't
city.
Doesn't make any sort of sense.
The USS Washington, D.C. really they have to figure it out. And again, Boimler drops the fact that he's like, we all know that this really would have gone to the Enterprise, but artistic license. Which, again, was funny. Which I feel like that's on the edge of fourth wall breaking. Like, you know, he's not wrong, but only Boimler is the one who, like, well, again, we all know our characters talk about the Enterprise a lot.
Yeah,
he makes
the
same joke every episode.
I want him to expand a little bit. Because, again, look, I'm the big, other than YouTube, I'm the biggest Next Gen fan there is. But, like, there are other series. So, like, I would love for it to be, like, it would be good with the Enterprise. Or, I mean, DS9, at least second, tertiary, you know, or something, you know. Like, acknowledge there's other ones.
Right, yeah. So they take a shuttlecraft to the Cerritos, and we get the Star Trek, the motion picture, but in a space dock, like, tearful viewing of the ship as we spin around it for a good, like, five. It felt like a long time. But
well, it sure got to me that, you know, I have nothing against the Cerritos as a ship, but there's not much to it. Maybe that's just me to it. You know, like, because there's not that many. I don't know, maybe it's just so familiar because, you know, it's the whatever Nebula. Well, I know it's California class, but originally the Nebula class. But anyway, it's like it's a saucer with some nacelles slapped on there. It's nothing really, you know. But so, you know, it's just, right. But it was kind of
cool.
Throw
in a couple lens flares and you spin around it. And
I was thinking the same thing, Philip. I'm like, you know, this somewhat works in the other movies.
It partly works because it's not that great.
It works because you have an emotional attachment to them and because the characters have an emotional attachment to them. And if you want to throw it in there, of course, this is subjective, but those are beautiful models. Right. Here, the Cerritos is a super ugly ship design and it's almost all emptiness. And I'm like, ugh. I'm like, it's funny because it's the joke, but then I'm like, I'm thinking, Cerritos is just, I don't like it. It's just kind of dumpy looking.
And again, this is just, again, like you said, subject, but I think the Enterprise, either of them, or most of them, look different from each angle. I mean, the Enterprise looks
There's
different.
There's only so many angles you can shoot the Cerritos on.
Yeah, it's just.
Well, I was laughing when they first arrive at the starbase and there's like these cut paste ships outside. Like one is like this and one is like this, like
upside down.
Literally it's like a saucer with like nacelles above and a saucer with nacelles below.
Like, an Akira and an X-01.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, but like, and, you know, again, it's a really fast shot, but they did look identical except for the fact that one had it above and one had it below. So we finally get,
she's one handsome lady.
And she gives her trademark warp me, which I guess is now the thing.
Why not?
That we say. Why not? It's actually growing on me, but But
yeah.
But they arrive there and
I do love which I actually think this is more Star Wars than Star Trek, the labeling where you are when you arrive, the scenes.
Just in the most recent Star Wars, like, well, they didn't really do that.
There's no Star Trek movie where they have.
Well, you know, the 09 movies, the JJ movies, yeah. The Kelvinverse do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they did that in Rogue One, but that's the first Star Wars movie to do it. They usually, like, we didn't know the name of Tatooine until, like, you read it. It's not actually spoken in the movie. Mm-hmm. It's the planet that is farthest from the center of the galaxy where all the fun happens.
I'm also thinking too, there's an episode of Next Generation where before they named it Kronos, it says Klingon homeworld. I'm pretty sure like it cuts.
That sounds
to the
right for some reason. Klingon yes.
World. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That does sound right. But yeah, anyway, so we get there and immediately this Klingon-y ship, I guess.
I know, right? It's
very Klingon-y.
Well, I was going to say, it's like a movie that introduces a new ship. Like, in other words, you know, in TV series, you know what a Romulan ship looks like. You know what a Klingon ship. But when there's a movie, suddenly it's going to be like, no, they look like this now. Like,
I did laugh. Okay. It had, like, more guns, like, bolted to the top of it. Like, you could tell they were, like, beefing it up a little bit.
I don't want to get too far into this because I recognize that it's a fake movie inside the holodeck, inside the show. So the plot points don't matter too much here, and that's fine.
Consistency.
I've let it go. But I was just curious. I'm like, so she faked this second contact in this Klingon death ship? Like, how did that happen? Like, how did she trick people into thinking?
They don't know what your ship looks like. They beamed down. Maybe. They don't know what your ship looks like. Yeah.
Again, I don't really get
They painted USS... San Clemente on the side.
The inn is like backwards. The sea is, you know,
it's like red paint, like the Bounty on the side. Actually would have been a fun callback if you saw San Clemente painted on the side, like HMS Bounty.
That would have been good, yeah.
And it's like,
I imagine to say,
what's
the name of the episode? Prosper and whatever.
Oh, Live Fast and Prosper.
And Prosper,
hard,
yeah.
Like
in other words, she's just doing like the bad copy of the. Anyway.
That would have been funny, yeah.
So she introduces herself as Vindicta, Ben just personified, and we get Orion Warrior Queen with a deep heritage of piracy. And Rutherford, part cyborg, as Bionic 5. I mean, this was all really funny because you could tell she's kind of coming up with it on the top of her head, at least the way they play it. And
Shemp.
Rutherford is just going for it, which is hilarious.
Well, for 5 seconds.
And Shempo, who it was apparently supposed to be Boimler.
I do like funny. The Three Stooges reference.
And this is where it's actually kind of interesting because they start yelling at each other and she starts quoting The Tempest because apparently you got to quote, you know,
Shakespeare.
Shakespeare. But it's actually a recorded message and she's boarding the ship, which that was actually kind of cool and like a tactic, like little non-one-dimensional. Then they start slaughtering the crew.
Yeah,
like,
that threw me
off. No abandon.
Yeah.
This is where it gets so problems. Like, so at first, I was like, what is happening? She's, like, literally murderizing everybody. Yeah. And then I'm like, and then when
she... And laughing about it.
Yeah, and then she shows up later, like, the holodeck version of her, and I'm like, oh, it's a switcheroo. She's the holodeck version of herself, and she's created this evil version of her character.
But she's not actually that person. But although, no,
this is pure,
that wasn't the way it was.
This is pure murder fantasy because her mom is mean to her. It's like, I don't understand what the show is trying to say right now.
And she wants to torture her mom.
I thought that too. at the end where the other Mariner showed up, I thought the one in the Starfleet uniform was actually Mariner, and then the holographic one was just a crazy program. But no, that's actually Mariner actually enjoying killing your entire crew.
Like, and again, this is stupid.
So the holographic Mariner was more of her conscience, her little Jiminy Cricket.
It and all that stuff. But, like, you know, if they could have just, like, been stunned and you can imply maybe that they're dead. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe
they
like
vaporize everybody.
Yeah, I just think that, I mean, that's a subtle point maybe. I'm just like, I know it's, I'm not a kid, but I'm like, I don't know if I would, you know. I know it's a cartoon. But.
It's pretty bloody. I just have to talk about that moment, too, because
it's gross,
but it's also probably the funniest part of
the Borg head.
The earring from.
Yes.
Oh, we'll get. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll get there in just a second. So, yeah. So first, Tendi's starting to get kind of uncomfortable because, you know, Mariner keeps
space
referring
pirate.
To her as like space pirate. And she's like, yes, death and killing and pirate steal. And then I also like the little moment with Boimler and Ransom where he's like, good one, kid. Just don't give her this because she's allergic to, and then he dies.
What?
And he's like, allergic to what? And, you know, of course, I'm glad they toned down the Boimler trying to find answers. Like, I felt there was just enough because it was starting to get old, but.
Boimler's. Been old for a while.
But we get to the mess hall then, and oh my gosh, greatest line. When you get to hell, tell the Paw race that Jockstra sent you. And I just cracked up at that when he's talking about the Paw race with his giant cannon and he's just shooting at him. And then of course he dies and they Yeah, it's really uncomfortable when they're like, here, put on his earring. And she's like, doesn't that have religious
significance? I love that line. I thought that was great. Her uncomfortableness with the whole situation is like, it's a view into the audience because we're like, what is going on? This is, how are we supposed to root for this person? This is terrible.
And she's like, this isn't you, Mariner. And eventually she just like nopes out and calls for the arch.
Yeah.
Look, many of us haven't been pirates for 5 years, so I think that...
Yeah, that was funny, too. For at least the last 5 years. Like you said, the Borg drone, which using as a personal shield, I thought was brilliant.
Oh, the head, yeah.
And then, you know, throwing it into a bomb, but the shield part was really cool. I'm like, that's actually really clever. And then that's where she's like, yeah, let's go torture the cat doctor. It's like, no. She's like, I don't want to do this. And she, you know, calls for the arch. But yeah, I'm glad at least Rutherford and Tendi were normal.
Rutherford,
people.
Guys. Rutherford.
Oh,
Rutherford.
So
Rutherford.
Wait, I can tell my boss anything I want. No, with no consequences, and then what he wants to do is tell him that he's like the best boss ever. It's like, why did you could just tell him that, but of course, you know.
And I like the not that I was worried, because that's not a worry, but like
oh, that
the
Rutherford
way...
would wanted to
no,
do
no, no,
something
no.
mean.
No, I'm skipping ahead. But like the relationship between him and Billups, is that it?
Yeah,
like,
Billups.
It kind of for me, I was like, is this like a romantic thing?
I started to think that.
But it wasn't. But it wasn't. It's not. It's
no,
just like
it was
really
just they both love being engineers like a lot.
Yeah.
But I also like it's like it's so weird because I'm like, I don't care if they go there.
Yeah.
But it's like, is that what they're doing? And then they leave it in such a weird, nebulous place.
Well,
that
I think it's more like, let's say you think your boss is really cool, but he's still your boss. But it's hard, so it's hard to like tell him like.
Well, it wasn't Rutherford.
Really
I think it was Billups that I started to think that because he's like, would you just like want to get a ship for the two of us? And
yeah, and we can repair it on our time. And it's like, yeah, it's like it kept being like, wait, are they? And then it's like, no, they're just talking about engineering.
Fine. Yeah.
Like over and over, which I'm hoping something happens because, like, at the end, like, Billups looks super depressed at that table.
Yeah,
and it's like, go be your his friend, Rutherford. He needs.
That's the thing. Like, if there was some sort of pre-established relationship here, like, we could say, oh, it's a mentor.
Well, all we got
thing.
Was the scene where, like, when he changed jobs and he,
you know,
that's the most we've seen him talk to Billups.
Right, exactly. And even then, we didn't get this like crazy sense that they like he was like intimidated by him and thought he was this great.
No.
So like it's like if you're gonna go in one direction, like just make sure it's clear so we understand what's happening. But yeah, no, it was. I mean, that whole subplot again. This is same thing with that episode where he goes and he changes career tracks. Mm-hmm. It's that same wholesome, awesome Starfleet message, and he's just like, I love working for this dude. He's an inspiration. It's great.
Right. I just can't tell him for some reason.
guys, look at him. He's so hardcore.
So yeah, he's just like single tears drinking his soup.
Rutherford is hands down the best character.
Oh, I love like he like just abandons the pirate thing of like let's save the ship.
And then Billups is like, you might be a murder pirate who destroyed my ship, but you're all right in my books. Oh, and I also liked when he's like, don't worry, I did blah 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 and artificially beam them all out. And he's like, what? How is it possible? It's a movie. You can do whatever you want.
You can beam lots of stuff in movies.
Which, I'm like, well, that's you're not wrong, Rutherford. That's good thinking.
I'm really doing the JJ here.
But yeah. I mean, it was funny how Billups was like, okay, you're the pirate, but you're acting like a Starfleet officer, so I guess it's cool.
Rutherford can't fake it. He is who he is.
He can't. He doesn't shoot anybody. He's just he doesn't do anything wrong. He's literally just in like a costume.
Nope.
So we get back to Mariner, and she gets on the bridge, and phasers everyone else who's there. So it's literally just her and Freeman. And then again. Like you said, Dad, it's weird because, okay, is she trying to get closure because she's like yelling at her mom about things? But her mom is right when she's like, I don't know who you are in the context of this program.
Yeah.
And is that supposed to be like her mom actually saying, like, I don't know who you are trying to be? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was weird.
Because also the Mariner is talking to her mom as if she should know who she is.
Right.
Well, Mariner's the one who created the program as a different character. And I get
which then made more sense when she fought Mariner, because at least the other Mariner like knew things.
But the Mariner she fights is herself. And that's why none of this, it totally undoes its own
premise.
Well, it's
a fight. Well, she's fighting with herself, literally.
Yeah, no. Also, she's murderizing people and her mom. She wants to torture her mother, and it's like,
I'm not saying she has a healthy relationship with her mom because I don't
or herself.
I don't think we're there or herself.
Yeah,
and then
like,
she
even slicing and again, but I mean, you know, they're trying to do something here, so I'm gonna go with them. So like the whole like, oh, you were cool until I turned 8, which with girls it's usually you're cool until I turned 16. But anyway, And so, but it was just, because I'm trying to delve into, you know, if we're creating this as a real person, and I mean in the context of the whole series, you know, what is Mariner's deal? What is, you know, what's up with her? So what has happened with the parental relationship? Because, you know, I guess that's her problem is her mommy issue, right? But anyway, so I don't think we solved it necessarily, or even got to any kind of truth. Because I've only watched it once, so maybe y'all who watched it more than once, the dialogue between her and herself, which, you know, maybe it revealed more than I thought it did, but it just seemed more like...
I don't think the reveal comes from that. I think it comes from her fighting herself and herself winning. But it's weird.
Yeah, because the holographic... we'll do it this way. The holographic her is saying all these truths.
Right.
Which I don't know if we've necessarily seen all these truths. Because again, and maybe you remember them more than I do, but something like, oh, you know, you just want to be, I even forget what she says. Like, it's stuff like good stuff about her. Oh, you, right. You, this is good things about you. And I'm not sure whether we've always seen all those good things. Like, I get at their heart, Beckett is a good person, but like, I'm not necessarily seen all that. And so, you know, anyway.
She calls herself, quote, if we're going to do this, she calls herself out, right? And she says, you don't hate the ship. You like the people. Like, why are you trying to destroy all of this? Like, why?
I don't care what you say. You really love the warp core.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fine. It's fine. It's like, okay, if this is the moment in the series that we're like, they've been building towards this. Again, we've seen pieces of it. I really, you know, we talked about them having a breakthrough with Freeman before. None of that matters still now. And now we're here again. And it's like this, if she doesn't get anything, what is the point of all of this? Why are we doing it? Why are we watching this? I don't understand. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then we get more movie stuff because we get her blowing up her own ship. And then of course the ship crash lands on the planet. And
my God,
cartwheels.
Beckett, what have you done?
Yeah, and this is actually a really cool part. Like, when they're fighting and they're vertically climbing the bridge, like, that was actually really cool. And fighting on top of the tactical section. And then, of course, we have holographic Mariner arrive or Vindicta versus Mariner, I guess, if we wanted to call it that. But, it's, you know... She's the only one, she only has herself to blame for the crew seeing her as a villain, but I'm like, but the crew doesn't see her as a villain. Her mom does.
Right, I mean, and if we're going to get into, I mean, like, this is very psychological.
It's a pretty pickle, guys, okay?
You know. Because we don't know, Beckett may see that people see her as a villain, which may not be objectively true, but right. It's her perception, and maybe that's why she acts out so much. That she that she thinks everyone has low expectations or doesn't expect, and so that's how she acts, is what she believes people perceive her to be, but that's not how they perceive it at all. So in other words, she's got a lot of issues.
Yeah, that's kind of at the end of it. It's she has a lot of issues, and we don't really deal with any of them in this episode.
I mean, like, if I were really to go dig deep, and maybe they will, I don't know. You know, maybe having
one episode they have left.
by having a very successful mother and father in Starfleet, you know, one would see that maybe she feels like she could never measure up to that success of having an admiral and a captain, you know, parent. And so why bother?
And also being around high ranking people for so long. We understand her attitude of lower decks gets the shaft and no one actually appreciates them. But they actually get a lot done, and she wants to stay in the lower decks.
Because then she feels whether it's that she should have these expectations of herself that she should be that. I mean, she's like, well, why bother? How can I reach that? So I should just be content to reach the lowest because I know I can do that, you know, and so.
And we still haven't seen, I mean, again, one episode left. Like, there's tons of her history we don't know of, like, how high of a rank did she get and where was she serving and then how did she get demoted, how many times, you know?
A lot.
But yeah, so
chocolate chip cookies, are you trying to kill the captain?
Yeah, at the end we learn that chocolate is what she's allergic to, and apparently Lieutenant Jed is there. Wasn't he on the other ship? Because I thought, wasn't he on was that the same
Canadian
character
ship?
on the Canadian girl's ship?
I don't remember.
That he was afraid of. I was surprised he was there, but yeah, it was Jet and then we finally end the program, and she realizes that it's all good. I don't know. She doesn't hate the Cerritos.
What did she learn?
Crew.
She says therapy was very effective.
Yeah,
I'm good now.
That's not how therapy works, Abe.
No.
Well, that she doesn't hate the ship or the crew, which I never felt that she did.
No.
It's really her mom that she has to deal with, and she didn't really do that.
And we've learned she doesn't hate her mom. She might have issues with her, but...
Yeah.
Well, she has anger issues, which
for
I
sure.
don't think...
Yeah,
sure. maybe.
Clearly.
She needs
yeah.
to visit sickbay about, like I said, but... Yeah.
Yeah,
she needs to do the tapping. You gotta do the tapping. That'll you know.
But yeah. So anyway, but then the holographic Mariner sacrifices herself, and the program is over. Then we get the lounge where, you know, we already talked a little bit about Rutherford and Billups, and this was probably the best moment, really, honestly, for Mariner, was this moment where she apologizes to Tendi. Is the most genuine of the whole episode. And, you know, sorry for racially stereotyping her friend, you know,
not to do this, but I'll do it. Because I like that Mariner. Beckett has shown, especially, was it the second episode with Boimler, that she knows aliens very well, actually, that she's very versed in alien culture. And so to have this blind spot with, Orion's
with Tendi.
I wonder if there was some significant cultural shift in with the Orion's in the last 5 years,
and maybe with the syndicate.
Yeah, it's just some sort of blind spot for her, but I don't know. Yeah,
because look, as much as I'm a Rutherford cheerleader, Tendi does not get a lot necessarily either in this series. So I would love to have a Tendi series, or a plot.
Well, and as she points out, like, she's not like most Orions, which is why she's in Starfleet, but mm-hmm. we don't ever delve into that.
Yeah,
she's
whatever.
Just like, honestly, she could just be a normal person. Like, the fact that she's green and Orion is like almost an afterthought.
Yeah, and we've seen countless examples in Star Trek of the one Klingon, the one
Ferengi,
changeling.
And they're generally pretty interesting characters, like, because they subvert your expectations, and also you get to, it's a conduit to learn. Like, we would learn something about Orion in a traditional
But we haven't learned anything about Orions in this 10 episodes.
Well, we've learned that some have, thrown off the shackles of piracy, slavery.
Within the last 5 years. They're going through the mid-70s and trying to figure that out. So.
Social change.
So at the end of this, we have Freeman also seeing the psychologist and also having major anger issues. So maybe we just need to both strap him to a warp core that's counting down and have him work it out.
No, they need to be in a shuttle pod that is rapidly running out of oxygen.
Or they need to be trying to rappel down a giant shaft.
We've already had
their breakthrough moment. They should not
maybe
be
Maybe that was supposed to be in this scene. I don't know. Maybe it just mixed up the order.
And by the way, I think we're letting the dead off a little bit, too. It's like, he's not even present. Yeah. So,
But we don't know.
He's a cameo character at
best. He could have been responsible for her for the past 5 years. Yeah, exactly. He was the one that demoted her and then put her on the Cerritos because she kept messing up there.
Daniel, I know what has happened. He's the one that promotes her. The mom is the one that has to demote her. This is how this works,
So here's a great theory. If they use Mariner to get back at each other, that's how you can justify a lot of her behavior, because she's just a pawn. And, she's super hurt by all this. You can do something like that, but this show is not, I feel like it's not deep or sophisticated enough.
So let me throw that, you're exploring something, and I'm going to go push it a little bit further. Are we assuming they're still married? Said?
I assume they're not, because of their last name situation and because
it's the 24th century, Dan.
The 80s, Daniel. Whatever we want.
And because of the one time we saw them interact, Admiral
is very formal.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm out of here.
Gotta go do Admiral stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, subtext was like, she's gonna stay at your house this weekend, kind of vibe.
So maybe the divorce was when she was 8. Look, I'm really going into the storyline here. Okay. I'm just throwing it out there.
That could be.
All of season two could be about her and her father's relationship.
And she could say something like, you know, maybe she has guilt on her parents splitting up. Again, we have not seen any of this, but she could. I don't know. We'll see. But that brings us back to Boimler has to figure out one more thing for his holographic program. And when he starts it up again, a holographic Freeman is giving a eulogy about Mariner and basically spills the beans that Mariner was her daughter. And if anyone found out, she'd probably demote them and kick them off the Cerritos just to keep things good. And Boimler, as we've come to expect, completely freaks out.
By the way, this may just be me as a viewer. When the holographic Freeman was talking, like, it took me a good couple seconds to be like, oh, he doesn't know. Like, in other words, it was just a natural scene. And I'm like,
right.
Oh, yes. Because, like, they don't go to his reaction for at least a couple seconds.
Right. Well, because, again, this was, you know, my theory the whole time is that at least Boimler didn't know. It's hard to tell with the other crew or even the senior staff, but...
I literally heard her call her mom the other day. Come on, Boimler.
Yeah. You know, Philip, you've mentioned before too about, I literally just completely blanked.
About Boimler.
Oh yes. Thank you. Philip, you've mentioned before too about how, like Boimler is too chaotic to be kind of like the focus of the episode. And I feel like he works really well here because he's just in bits. Like he's just
pushing
kind of
the
like,
plot along.
Yeah. But he's not the focus. Like he's not the main character.
He's a D player.
Well, yeah. Because this isn't a Boimler Mariner pairing episode.
Exactly. Yep.
And I was this is actually probably what they should have done more of is where Mariner is the lead and then the other three orbit around her. But they did too much pairing in the beginning.
No, by making, I'm doing it in priority, alpha, beta, you know, whatever, gamma, delta. That like by making Boimler the lead.
Delta shift.
Yes. That's about how much Boimler I want. I'm going to be honest. So like, you know, that, you know, Beckett's not necessarily my favorite, but it's fine. But, you know, but having Tindy Rutherford be more than that.
Oh, so you're being quite a pineapple, Philip.
Oh, man.
No, but I was, you know, I was true, less though. Annoyed by Boimler this episode. Yeah. And he was,
yeah, just the right amount.
He was pretty funny, like, throughout. Like, because his desperation for, like, it would always come at an unexpected moment. Like, he would run into the scene and be like.
And it made more sense where he was just doing his own thing. He wasn't playing the program. Yeah. He didn't even go with them in the beginning. And that actually made it would have been weird if he was, like, on their crew taking over and shooting everybody. That would have been even weirder.
Right, yeah.
He just has one mission.
We get to the final scene where I feel bad for Boimler because he literally has it down. He's going to ace this interview, and he completely falls apart.
By the way, what does he say? Yeah.
Mariner's hot.
What?
Wait, not hot, ugly. And then runs away. That's literally all he gets out. And it's...
Where do you see yourself diplomatically in 5 years?
Just say the first thing, Mariner. Mariner what? It's hot. What? I mean, it's ugly. I mean, yeah, it's...
And the only thing Freeman comments is that he was not adequately prepared.
Yeah.
Right.
So she appreciates. She doesn't care that he's talking about her daughter. She just appreciates some good preparation. That's good to know.
Yeah. And then... we still got two more jokes left because they got to cram more in. So we go down to the photon torpedo tube of Vendicta rising from the dead, to which Leonardo da Vinci shoots her and says, you know, not today. Which I was telling Philip earlier, I'm like, okay, that was, it's like, okay, photon torpedo tube, a little too much. And then Leonardo da Vinci shoots her. Okay, we're back. That's funny. And then they take it up a notch with the signed signatures from the end of Star Trek VI. And I'm just like, stop, guys, stop. It's too much.
But I have a question about that.
Well, it was signatures of the characters.
No, right. No, not the signatures. Question about Vendicta.
Okay.
Who we know is the real Mariner.
Right.
So what is happening in this scene?
Hmm.
I would say the program brought her back because she's not playing herself. So if Vindicta ever comes back, she'll be a hologram.
Well, I think it's an interesting question about how holodeck.
But I mean, it's a good point. I didn't think about that.
She didn't create. There's no holodeck character.
Well, there's a role of Vindicta that she played.
Right.
Like, can you put
like Boimler had a holographic stand-in.
Can you put a
character... I'm just saying, if she ran the program again, or if like, Tendi came back and played the program without any of them else, I think that Vindicta would be run by the holodeck.
It's basically like when I play Bridge Crew, I don't like people or strangers. And so when Darren's not there, it's the CPU.
Gotcha.
It's just the CPU.
That's fair enough. I again.
No, it's a good point though.
It's a stinger. I get it. It's just for the funny joke, and it is funny.
I think it's a throwaway.
I love when you know, not on the Maya watch. That was great, but you know, I was just like, wait a minute, she's a real person. But it's whatever. It's fine.
So that's, and then we get our preview for next week, which is titled "No Small Parts." And we get an exocomp, guys.
Oh, God. When I saw that, I was going crazy, and my wife was staring at me. And I'm like, look, I know Darren and Daniel are going to be wicked looking.
Oh, man. We're going to be so excited about the exocomps.
It's a crew. It's a member of the Starfleet.
I'm trying to remember now.
It's got
the rest
little badge.
Yeah, it's a little badge. It's so and it's like, it's blue, like the bottom half of it's blue, which now I think all exocomps need to have
color coding.
A badge. And
this?
Now here could be something fun. Could that be the original exocomp? I can't remember now what happens to the original exocomp at the end of the episode.
No,
we're not going to treat it as... There's one left, though. One sacrifices itself for the other two.
Yeah.
And then the lady says she promises she won't treat them as simple tools anymore. So that could be one of the original.
The
that
OG.
Would be cool.
That'd be fun.
Well, and obviously, which is interesting because it seems to have a very high Tendi focus.
Is that why it's called No Small Parts?
Oh.
Well, I'm guessing it's because Lower Decks are the crew that are part of the ship and there are no small parts on a starship is the overall feel. But I don't know what... I'm trying to remember the rest of the... once the exocomp came on screen, I kind of blanked
blindness. It was Boimler talking to Beckett. You're... captain's daughter.
That's right. And then he's like, "Oh, do you say kissy kissy mama?" And then they beam up like right at that moment.
Yes, yeah.
So I get the feeling that they're playing the Freeman thinks that Boimler's hitting on her daughter.
Yeah,
because you also had the saying she's hot, which she kind of reacted to in this episode. I don't know. I don't know if we have time, guys, for all that in one episode. There's a lot to do.
Refreshing though. It is refreshing that there's no season long threads that need to be picked up. There's no ginormous questions.
The season long thread is Boimler finding out? Like that's
literally
getting
the
payoff for.
I mean, if he does or he
doesn't. I've been talking about it this whole time.
The stakes have never been smaller.
Yeah.
It's nice. There's no universe-ending paradoxes. There's no
Spock
shuttles.
Had Q.
There's 17 red lights. There's no in the sky. It's just. It looks like just another episode for the most part, and I'm totally there for that at least.
Because I'm thinking that the stakes as far as like what could if they're doing some sort of season, finale, whatever. Like the biggest thing to break the universe would be someone gets transferred, or someone gets promoted. Like that's that's the only thing that can break the concept of you know what I'm saying.
So you're thinking the finale is gonna be Beckett getting promoted to lieutenant,
taking
again?
Off her one pip very slowly and putting it on the table.
Says in the Memory Alpha, it says the Cerritos encounters a familiar enemy. I don't remember. The enemy, again, I blanked on that whole thing once it showed the exocomp.
Oh, is it the guy that threw things at him? Is that?
but it also says, Tendi helps a struggling recruit find her footing. And I'm assuming that recruit is the exocomp.
What does she say? What does she say her name is? She's like, I come up with the
it
most
It was like Bubble something.
I can't wait. I'm excited about that. Yeah.
Oh, because like yeah. I could see like, you know, it Tindy was the new recruit at the beginning and Boimler was her mentor or whatever. So now Tindy's being assigned first recruit.
For like half an episode. Yeah. But yeah. Now, I remember back when we thought that's how the show was going to go, guys. Like episode 2.
We were all so young then.
But yeah. But no, it was. So yeah, I get again. Like I'll totally admit, when I first watched this, I think it was just the right time of day and the right bit of comedy to just it hit me on all cylinders. I was cracking up, and yeah, watching it a second time, I'm like, okay, this is still funny, but none of the other shows made me laugh like that. That was a lot of fun. And honestly, I wish it had been longer. Like, as it was like a third of the way through, I'm like, more. I want this.
There'll be two more
going,
movie episodes, and that's it.
God, they put so much in 24 minutes. I'm amazed at this. But yeah, but one more episode, and then we're done with Star Trek, guys. It's all.
Yep. No new Star Trek.
Nothing new
again.
For seven nothing. More years.
Yeah, wait. No. Then we'll be switching to some coverage of Discovery, which we're going to break up a little bit with some other topics as well. And we have 13 episodes of Star Trek Discovery this season. So it'll, which I think is one less than last.
And then
Picard, but who knows?
Right after that, right? I don't think it's probably back to back, but I assume
it's
what's next.
I think it's back to back to back, but I don't think
they've been filming.
Picard.
I don't know. That's a great question.
Well, Picard ran from January to May. To April. And Discovery's running until January. So timetable-wise, it could, but I think you guys are right. I don't think they're ready.
I feel like they've put out
I don't know if I could take that. That's a lot of Star Trek.
Well, I mean, theoretically, you have Strange New Worlds, you have Picard. I mean, it's not like it's that hard to put out a season 2 of Lower Decks.
Well, and that's another question is, are we ever going to start to have overlap? Because, you know.
No,
because they don't want you getting extra for your subscription, Darren.
No.
There will be just enough Star Trek content for every week of the year. Not overlaps.
Okay, well, if we had, so let's say Picard was on time, that would go 10 episodes into March, and then let's say Strange New Worlds. I mean, that's if Picard was a 10 episodes.
Which it probably will be.
So let's say Strange New Worlds is another 10 ish, that would bring us up to June, with Lower Decks having started in August. So then June, July, there's room. If you added a couple more episodes, it literally could go back to back to back.
So
they have like 12 episodes for Strange New Worlds.
I'm doing mad Googling here, which I know I can't do in 5 seconds here. But it looks like they're not projecting Strange New Worlds until 2022. Because like they haven't even started yet. So they're going to start production of Strange New Worlds
and
next
Section
year.
31. And
Don't.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah, even Picard was delayed. It was supposed to be now, basically.
And then I don't even know when Prodigy is supposed to come out.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Well, but that's Nickelodeon, so that's
no,
a little different.
No, it's Paramount Plus, Darren.
Come on, Darren.
No, it's on Nickelodeon.
Yeah, which
right?
is on Paramount Plus, a.k.a. CBS All Access.
Right. Because does Paramount own Nickelodeon?
Yeah, yes. Well, Viacom.
I didn't know that.
It's the
Paramount. Yeah, in other words, if you go to CBS All Access now, after its first expansion pack was released, now you'll get Nickelodeon. As well as MTV, as well as two other channels, too, other than main CBS.
Okay, I didn't realize that, but that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that'll be... Yeah, For some reason, I totally thought it was just going to be on like a Nickelodeon
Network.
Channel or something. I didn't realize it was going to be available on All Access. So.
Well, I'm interested, whether it will be on Network Nickelodeon, if I can say that, but you know what I mean by that. Non-streaming Nickelodeon. And then also, I'm wondering...
Nickelodeon Channel.
Yeah, and then, and as we talk now, you know, Discovery Season 1's on main CBS. you know, right. re-airing. It's not even re-airing, it's airing for the first time on CBS. So I'm wondering.
Because they have nothing else to put on because nobody's working.
Yeah. Wait, how do we think that the captain is going to be slimed in that series?
I don't know.
Waiting for someone to get the joke.
Damn it.
You slimed, really, Darren? Nickelodeon?
No.
You can't do that on television.
I kept thinking of was how we still don't know how JoJo is getting back in time for her series.
Spoilers,
about.
Spoilers, she's not.
It's all a dream, Section 31. Or nightmare.
Yeah.
But anyway.
All right. Well, if someone wanted to find you, Daniel, and talk to you about your Da Vinci holodeck program, where could they find you?
They can find me on Twitter.
On my watch.
At one of Dan, that is the number one, not the word.
And Philip, if someone wanted to talk to you about your new fleet of exocomps, where could they find you?
Wouldn't they be a race then? And if so, well, they can tweet me these thoughts at NC Public Service.
No, we're judging you by how you treat that race. And if someone wanted to talk to me about my favorite title sequence for my imaginary dreamscape, they can find me on Twitter, Twitch, or Instagram under username Dr. Sci-Fi.
Here's a question.
S-C-I-F-I.
If the exocomp advances in rank enough and becomes the next in command of a starship, would they be the exocomp?
Hey-o. What if?
I just want to see the exocomp be the boss over Mariner.
What if they retire from that? Would that make them the XXOXOcomp?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Stop.
Wait a minute. What if they were engaged and then they broke off their engagement to someone who was second in command? So they would be the XXXO. I can't even do it. It's just too many levels at this point.
You flew too close to the sun, Daniel. All right.
And then when they were in a competition, that'd be the XXXO's comp.
But then if they were playing tic-tac-toe the competition,
what
they'd
if they
be
got
playing
a
X's
free ticket,
with the X
they would be the XO's comp.
save the title generation for the next episode, guys. Well, I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
Stranded here on City Alpha 3.